All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm talking to you as usual. I'm in the borough of Queens, New York City. It is the 15th day of March, 2022. I do like to remind you, I write a newsletter called Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks. You can sign up for that by going to miningstocks.com. We like to tout Chen Lin's work as well. ChenPicks.com is where you go to buy what is Chen buying, what is Chen selling. And Michael Oliver, who's with us today, it's OliverMSA.com for his excellent Momentum and Structural Analysis newsletter. And we do want to thank all of you for sending, for listening to the show, and we encourage you to send along whatever comments you have about this show, positive, negative, or whatever, send them along to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. Questions, the number four, taylor@gmail.com. We do need and want to thank our sponsors making this show economically viable: Irving Resources, Novo Resources, Eloro Resources, Hannon Metals, Firefox Gold, Timberline Resources, Lion One Metals, and SK Mining are this week's sponsors. I've titled today's show, Turning Problems into Profits with Kevin Duffy. Kevin Duffy, Dr. Quentin Henning, and Michael Oliver are this week's guests. During the 2008-2009 financial crisis, Kevin Duffy's Baring Asset Management Fund registered triple-digit gains while most everyone else saw their 401k accounts turn into 201k accounts. By exercising healthy skepticism and mainstream propaganda, that is, skepticism of mainstream propaganda and studying history, Kevin has demonstrated how by recognizing past patterns of human and institutional behavior and by sticking to the merits of long-term value, you may be able to avoid large-scale losses suffered by investors during these difficult times. Now, given the increasingly tumultuous markets during the first quarter of this year and seemingly continuing on the way it looks, we want to see what Kevin has to say and how he is turning hard times into good times. He certainly has done well from what we can see so far this year. So I'm looking forward to Kevin's second half of today's show. Dr. Henning will be with me right after our first commercial break to talk about Eloro's Isca project that's in Bolivia, turning into a very large-scale, bulk mineable silver tin deposit. Really one that, well, Quentin suggests it may be the largest tin discovery in a generation, and there is a substantial shortage of tin, from my understanding, on the world's market now, so it could come. This is coming at a very good time, I would suggest. So we'll hear from Dr. Henning right after our first commercial break, but right now I'm really happy to tell you that Michael Oliver is with us again, and thank you so much for joining us again, Michael.
Hi, Jay. Good to be back.
It's always good to have you. You know, I noticed something that Lance Roberts, he recently pointed out, that when the Fed tightens into a rising commodity market and slowing economy, and when stock, that generally, when those conditions are met, when, you know, the economy is slowing, you get rising commodity prices, and you tighten, that you can expect a decline in the equity markets of between 30 and 50%. Do you see that as a possibility in the cards, or not in the cards, based on your work, on your momentum and structural work?
Well, oh, absolutely. We've been pounding the table. The action, well, first off, the stock market, basically S&P, NASDAQ, made their highs in December, and they suffered a more significant drop in NASDAQ 100. That's a leadership sector with Microsoft, Amazon, and Apple, and so forth, heavily weighted symbols. And the S&P also turned down. By our metrics, using annual momentum, which is to say long-term trend measurement. NASDAQ broke in January. The February action broke S&P. We're now major negative long-term on both indices, meaning the market, the U.S. market. We also analyze Apple, Amazon, and Microsoft because they're the three leading stocks in terms of weighting within those indices, huge double percent weighting within both indices. So they have helped cause the upside in those indices and now the downside. And they have broken annual momentum as well. So we are major bearish. That doesn't mean you can't have sharp rallies, but don't blame the situation on what you see in the papers.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a dozen-year bull market in the stock market, bigger than any in the history of the United States, powered by monetary policy, interest rates effectively at zero since 2009. It had a little hump up to 2.5% federal funds rate and then back down near zero. And maybe they'll raise it a quarter point tomorrow, probably will. But basically, you've had rates off the page on the downside, and you've had money flow incredibly. Normally, you double the money supply, M2, every decade, roughly, since 1959, in fact. It's been a constant. However, in the last 2 years, it's gone up well over 40% in just 2 years. So we're now in accelerated monetary growth. If the Fed wants to try to put its foot on the brake for psychological reasons, and because a lot of economists are saying you should do it, they're going to help precipitate a global recession, which is already going to happen anyway. And once those metrics start to show up in their silly indicators, like some unemployment number or retail sales drop or something that they didn't expect, then they'll be able to claim, oh, gosh, we have to be cautious here in terms of future rate rises. And I wouldn't be surprised the word caution is somewhere in the notes tomorrow when they raise rates a quarter of a point, that they have to be cautious about future rate rises. Anyway, high commodity prices are here to stay. Oh, you're going to have sharp sell-offs. Like oil hit 130, next thing you know, you're in the mid-90s, okay? Well, that was excessive for the time being. But you're not taking oil back down to 40 bucks. You're going to keep it at a new high level now. Same is true with wheat, corn, soybeans, sugar, copper, etc. They've come up out of the hole in terms of annual momentum in late 2020. Gold had already had its doubling prior to that. But then the commodities woke up late 2020. So a year and a quarter ago, we put out a report saying expect a commodity explosion. We use the word explosion, which is kind of table pounding. But it turns out that's what we have. But we're at levels in certain markets that you can expect to see sharp sell-off. So it's not a place to be saying, gee, I'm going to get long oil freshly. Those points passed, a good while ago. There are some markets that look like there's a lot more to come, and in particular gold and silver. And if we're correct on the high commodity prices basically staying at high levels, forget the fact that there's short-term sell-offs here and there, but basically at a new range, let's call it, globally, and probably even higher because we've got crop problems coming up this next year, we know, with fertilizer problems and therefore yields on crops and so forth. But that's going to cause recessionary impact globally. China ain't looking too good right now. Europe's not looking too good right now. And we can, a lot of people in the U.S. think, well, I think Cramer the other day said something on CNBC about, well, our economy's in good shape. Well, he's looking at certain metrics that are lagged, you know. They're yesterday's metrics. When this wave effect hits the commodity price level in general, which, by the way, started well before Russia ever got around Ukraine, so don't blame it on that. You know, this upturn in commodities came a year and a quarter ago. We're going to go into a recession, and then the central banks are going to be in panic mode because what do? They can't really lower rates. They're effectively at zero. If they try to raise rates, they're going to cause their bubble to break even more. So it's going to be an interesting predicament to watch the central banks go into a swirly. And all I can say is enjoy it. Be on the right side of the markets. And I think the right side right now, the best place to be is in the gold and silver area. And sit back and be cautious.
Yeah. So you mentioned before we went on the air that The gold shares are doing quite well, but a lot of people are in a tizzy because we've seen a couple of down days here.
And, yeah, we've had a sharp drop here.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I just looked at a GDX chart. Forget momentum. Momentum is positive. It's been positive for several weeks back. Silver, which had been a laggard to gold and broke out about 4 weeks ago. GDX, same thing. But look at a GDX weekly price chart, and you'll see it made a low back in the last week of January, I think it was. It's down around 28.5, okay? Since then, there have been 6 weeks of weekly bars that are higher highs each week, higher lows, 6 weeks in a row, and you've gained 40%.
Mm-hmm.
So what's wrong with that market finally taking out a prior week's low?
Yeah.
it's time for a take a breath, okay?
Yeah.
And right now, you're back above that prior week's low, which was 36.5 last week. You're trading over 37 right now. So these kind of pullbacks you're going to get, expect them, but they're now occurring at higher levels than the 1700s in gold or the 1800s in gold, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So it's going to be a violent trend, but I think gold is now at the forefront of the what you might call the alternative place to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know I've asked you, just with about a minute left here, I know I've asked you maybe the last time you were on about uranium, there does seem to be some sense that uranium is starting a real bull market now, and I did hear that most of the excessive amount of uranium has now been taken off the market, such that the power companies have to go out now and start to go long, have to mm-hmm. engage in long term contracts, and that's something new. It looks like it could be, you know, from a fundamental point of view, looks like it could be very bullish for uranium, but what are your charts telling you?
Well, we got very bullish in 2018 at levels that are, you know, way, way, way below here. And we have not changed our view, and that's based on annual momentum again, a very long-term
uh-huh.
metric.
Right.
And we went into congestion zone in uranium for the last 6 months, where you went up, down, up, down, up, down, but at a high level
uh-huh.
in relation to prior years. We've broken out of that and exploded now up into the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And that congestion zone was either side of 50, 48, mm-hmm. 50, 40, mid-40s
uh-huh.
to 50.
Uh-huh.
So it's exploded up out of here and resumed its trend. So don't just look at oil, which to
yeah.
some extent has led the energy sector to the upside and gotten, you know, probably somewhat excessive for a while. But look at things like uranium and look at natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
Natural gas has had a nice up move from in the $1 range on up to 6.5 and now congesting either side of 5. But it's still not very high priced historically, and we still think that the natural gas has a very sharp another leg to occur at minimum. It may take it up even to double digit price levels. So don't just look at oil; it's not the only energy source. You're right; uranium is critical, and it's starting to explode again.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so
okay. Okay, Michael, thank you very much, and for your help again. It's always great to have you with us. We'll look to do it again, hopefully, in a couple of weeks
okay.
from now. All right, folks, well, we do have to go to break. Dr. Quentin Henning will be with me to talk about El Oro. Boy, they are onto a really exciting large-scale project that I think you're going to want to know more about for sure. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Dr. Henning.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Lion One Metals is focused on high-grade gold in Fiji, led by legendary Canadian financier Walter Barakoff. Lion One is permitted for production and drilling for discoveries in one of the most exciting high-grade gold projects in the prolific South Pacific Ring of Fire. Lion One trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol LIO and on the OTCQX under the symbol LOMLF. Go to our website at liononemetals.com for more information about Lion One Metals and high-grade gold in Fiji.
SK Mining Corp, trading under the symbol ESK on the TSX Venture and ESKYF on the OTCQX, is a mineral exploration company targeting precious metals, rich VMS deposits in the heart of British Columbia's Golden Triangle. SK Mining controls a prospective land package totaling 130,000 acres, which lies across a geologic trend that once hosted the prolific SK Creek Mine. With a world-renowned geological team, funding in place, and shareholders such as Eric Sprott, SK Mining is on the cusp of a world-class discovery. Go to skmining.com to subscribe for updates.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
If you think you've seen online TV before, let us surprise you.
VoiceAmerica.tv is online now.
The leader in live internet talk radio has done it again. Multiple channels, a state-of-the-art viewing experience, live and on-demand programs streaming 24 hours a day. It's exactly what you want, when you want it.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
From health and wellness to business, sports, and everything in between. Discover our new world. Visit VoiceAmerica.tv now and experience the future of online television.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
Have you had a chance to check out Voice America's online magazine and blog? If you love our hosts and shows, check out articles that give an even deeper perspective, plus topics about health and fitness, movie reviews, philosophy, business tips and tactics, spirituality, positive thought, current events, and even more about your favorite host. It's just a click away at blog.voiceamerica.com. That's blog.voiceamerica.com. The Voice America Press Blog. All access, all the time.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really glad to have Quentin Henning with me once again. Today, he's going to be with us, or he is with us, to talk about ISCA project. It's a silver tin project that El Oro owns and is was advancing it very, very rapidly. It seems to be doing extremely well. It's one of the more exciting stories in my newsletter, I would say. Quentin is a technical advisor to El Oro. And of course, he is also the mainstay technical advisor at Crescat Capital, where his weekly commentary on Crescat Gets Active YouTube series is highly recommended for investors in the mineral exploration space. In fact, it's one of those must-see videos that I make sure I find out, I watch, and you can watch it live. Actually, a lot of times I don't have the time to do it, but you can catch up with it later. It's just a very, very valuable service, and one of the companies that Quentin covers and is very much involved with is El Oro. Before I say hello to Quentin, I should tell you that it trades in Canada under the symbol ELO. You can buy it in the United States under the symbol ELRRF. There's 63.7 million shares outstanding. I believe that's a correct number. Today's around 11 o'clock this morning, at least, when I checked it, is at $3.79 in U.S. money, giving a market cap at a market cap of around $240 million U.S. dollars or so. Quentin, thanks for joining us again.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Jay.
It's good to have you and talking to us from Colorado, I presume. And, you know, I've been following El Oro. I think you mentioned the name to me back around November of 2020, and I'm sure glad I did because it's really blossoming out into a what looks like a very major discovery of a silver tin polymetallic discovery. The company, you know, it's that ISCA project It's got these breccia pipes that are hosting the mineralization around the perimeter of this large caldera in Bolivia. And most of the focus thus far has been on the Santa Barbara pipe, but the scale of mineralization there just seems to be growing, both to the north, and now they're poking some holes to the south down into some of the other, I guess at least one of the other breccia pipes. But can you give us an update on this story, Quentin, because it really is, I think, one of the better stories out there.
It is. There's no denying this is a world-class discovery. Look, this is the only time I've been associated with a drill program where, you know, after a year and a half, they have yet to find the limits of mineralization. It's absolutely unbelievable. They kind of had this view early, say a year ago, that let's drill off a part of this and take it to a resource, you know, and they focused on the Santa Barbara area, which is one of the breccia pipes that you mentioned, thinking, you know, this would be a reasonable task. And then they started drilling and drilling more and hitting more and drilling more and hitting more. And it went on and on. And, you know, most recently they've announced extension, now a major extension of the Santa Barbara target area or this system to the south. And, you know, this hole that came back a few days ago, this is early March, is absolutely jaw-dropping. You know, it hit a 373 meters.
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, that's like a quarter of a mile. You know, like, how often do you drill something like that? And the grade was 172-gram silver equivalent. Now, you know, the drill hole does have a significant amount of silver, but, you know, guess what? Tin is a major component of this drill hole. So this is, you know, by far the value is in the tin in this area. So this is an exciting development. It still has the lead zinc as well. So there's, you know, the typical base metal assemblage that you would expect with silver. But this tin component is really setting Isca apart from any other modern discoveries in this region in Bolivia. You know, so to put it in context, you know, other mines like, say, San Cristobal, they're a traditional silver lead zinc mine in all respect. Whereas this thing has this tin kicker, and the tin is just mind boggling. You know, inside of that, I think the thing that I found most intriguing was that inside of that, there are some higher grade intervals. For instance, there's a 28.5-meter interval of 401-gram silver equivalent, which does include 0.61% tin.
Wow.
I mean, just think about it. That's a lot of, you know, tin's $45,000 a ton right now. So that's a lot of dollar value in tin alone. And then additionally, there was another interval inside that was 95 meters of 261-gram silver equivalent, and that included 0.43% tin. And then further down the hole, look, this hole, it was drilled kind of westward from the underground adit there that they've been drilling from, and it tested the, you know, more or less the full width of the Santa Barbara target area. And down towards the bottom of the hole, they hit another 60-meter interval of 0.28% tin. You know, so there's clearly a driver of the system, like the magmatic driver, the tin porphyry that produced this system, is, you know, interpreted to be lurking down in that region.
Yeah, as I understand it, that hole that you referred to might have hit a target area. I think it's down on the edge of the Porco breccia pipe. Do I have that right?
Porco breccia pipe. It is actually further south. If you look at Porco, it's about another kilometer, believe it or not, to the south.
Okay.
There's this very distinct geophysical expression,
right,
that the company has seen, which in profile looks like a giant tongue that's emerging out of the Porco area and extends all the way up. It's kind of subhorizontal. It looks like a dragon's tongue, and it extends subhorizontally up underneath the Santa Barbara area. And that's why I think this thing's going to continue to grow. I think at this point, the company realizes that trying to drill this thing off is going to take a little bit longer, you know, maybe another 6 months or so. So they forestalled the, you know, the goal of setting a getting into a resource stage a little ways, which in my view is a good move, because I mean, this thing, the way it's growing and the dollar value of this rock they're hitting, like, why would you stop drilling here? You know, this doesn't make any sense. So I would say look for a lot of news to come. I think the biggest takeaway from that news release, Jay, is that this drill hole clips that dragon's tongue that I mentioned. It basically drills through an area that's anomalously magnetic. Now, what Bill and Oswaldo have determined is the mineralization, this tin mineralization, occurs with a mineral called pyrrhotite, and it's an iron sulfide. It's like kind of like pyrite, but it's magnetic. Okay, so this is one of those rare cases where you can actually see a geophysical expression that is likely directly related, you know, can serve as a proxy, we'll call it, for mineralization. All right. Now, if people look at the news release from, let's see, it was March 1st that this was put out.
Right.
There is a figure that's attached to that that shows this big red blob that extends southward from the Santa Barbara area. And that this hole, this hole number, let's see, it's MET, it's, what do they call it, I don't know what the name of the hole was, can't remember
it. Yeah, I don't have it
I don't have the name right in front of me, but it basically clipped the end of this tongue. Here it is, DXBU03, okay, it clipped the end of this tongue, and the thing is wide open. I mean, you know, you want to talk about a billion-ton-plus target. It's clearly there. This is incredible.
It's a very sizable magnetic anomaly, I believe. And they just clipped the top of that thing, I guess. And it looks very large based on the pictures that they sent along with the news release. As I understand it, Quentin, these tin usually is formed or settles out at lower levels, at deeper levels. Is that right?
Yeah, tin usually sticks closer to the mothership, meaning the causative intrusive. Okay, so the magma itself that generated all the metal, right? And the tin usually stays closer to them. And that's not to say that it's like right there and then it shuts off. That's not how it works. I would say over the next few hundred meters, you know, 500 meters, a kilometer, something like that, this system should persist. And, you know, if anything, we should see more and more tin. You know, and who knows? I mean, this thing's every time we drill, it's more surprises. I think we might start to see copper and gold and stuff emerge too. But you know, that's all to be seen here. It's really exciting.
Yeah. So you think the maiden resource will be delayed? I know I met with Dr. Bill Pearson up in Vancouver, and he seemed to be hinting at maybe a sort of a two prong resource. Maybe one from more the northern area that's more silver zinc lead type, and then one to the south that has more tin component. And but anyway, it's going to come later, I guess, the resource is what you're suggesting, than we might have expected earlier.
That's right. There's no point in announcing a resource right now when you're in the middle of hitting, you know, some of the best mineralization you've hit to date. I mean, it's crazy. You know, let's drill this thing off for a few months and see where it goes.
Yeah. Can you give us a sense? I think you said 45,000 a ton for tin. Is that substantially higher than normal? Because I don't follow the tin markets that much. I'm not familiar with the tin markets.
Tin's an interesting metal. You know, it was mainly sourced from Southeast Asia and China for many years, in fact, decades. But those sources are gradually running out. Plus, China is consuming their tin production. They don't necessarily export tin like they used to. So tin has become scarcer and scarcer, especially in the Western world. And because of that, the price has gone up here lately. Okay, so if you wind back the clock, there was a tin shortage in the mid-1980s. There was a brief spike. But for the most part, tin was trading in the, you know, low dollars, maybe $3, $4, $5 a pound, which in terms of, you know, metric ton is, you know, maybe $7,000-$9,000 a metric ton, something like that. Okay, it's only been in the past, you know, couple of years here that we've seen tin really take off. There was a brief uptick, I think, in the late 2000s, and then, you know, in early teens here. But this most recent uptick is genuine. It's real. There's a tin shortage. There have been no significant primary tin deposits discovered in recent time. So, you know, Iskia is absolutely hitting this right. I mean, this is probably one of, if not the biggest tin discovery, hard rock tin discoveries in history. So if, you know, in a market that's craving tin right now, you know, what better present to deliver here is a high-grade tin porphyry.
Yeah, what's not to like? And all right, so how many drills are operating there? And I guess they're going to just be drilling the bejeebus out of this thing, huh? You're going to be just drilling like crazy.
We got three, but the fourth one coming. So they'll have four drills operating here shortly. And, yes, they are drilling like mad right now. If you look at the news release, every time they publish a news release, you can actually keep track of where the drilling is because Bill and team label the drills mm-hmm. that are in progress and so forth. And you'll see that they have a whole bunch of drill holes set up down there in the south end of the Santa Barbara area of different, you know, off of different drill pads. And they're gonna tackle this thing clear down to the Portico area. I think by, you know, say 6 months from now, we'll have a much clearer picture of exactly how big this thing is. I think it's going to be enormous. It's absolutely huge.
Yeah, I think you said the most significant tin discovery in a generation, and I asked Bill Pearson whether he thought Quentin was getting carried away, and he said, no, by no means. And now you're talking about – anyway, it's a very exciting story. So they can drill year-round there?
Yes, they can. I mean, there is a winter season, quote unquote, in which it kind of gets cold and blowy, which is coming. But right now, they're doing a great job drilling. I would say last year, other than an occasional windstorm, the company was able to operate pretty continuously for the past 18 months.
Mm-hmm. And they're well financed, I believe. They've got money in the bank, and I think they put out and made an announcement of some sort of shelf prospectus or shelf financing that would allow them some flexibility upwards to, I think, if I'm not wrong, upwards to $100 million or something like that.
I believe that's correct. I haven't read through the shelf prospectus. The company has a pretty good treasury right now, but mm-hmm. they are churning through $1.5 million or so a month, I believe, currently with this drill program. So they need to hit it hard. You know, this is one of those deposits where, you know, the price of the company, fortunately, is very high, and it absolutely justifies drilling intensively, you know, to create value. So I have very little issue with the way that Tom and team have approached things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've kept the share structure very nice and tight with 63.7 million shares, which is really sort of reminds me of Great Bear, another company that I followed, and they did such a remarkable job of keeping the dilution down. And the other way this reminds me of that is that these guys are, you know, they're drilling. They're not quick to make an announcement because at Great Bear, they kept finding at Dixie Project, they kept finding more and more. Same thing is happening here. So better not to, if you keep finding more, you might not better set people's sights too low, I guess. So this is quite a story, Quentin. I want to thank you for bringing it to my attention some time ago. And folks can hear more about this and other companies that Quentin's involved with at Crescat, many of which I follow here as well. And Crescat gets active every Friday, I think at about, 2 o'clock Eastern time or something like that. Quentin, you guys do that?
Yeah, it's 2 o'clock Eastern time, usually a little after because we're running late, either Tavi Kevin or myself are getting flies together, but
And it's live, and it's live. People can watch it live, and then, of course, later on. Quentin, I want to thank you so much for spending time with us today and updating us on this very exciting story.
Certainly, Jay, anytime.
All right, folks, we do have to go to break now, but don't go away because Kevin Duffy will be with me to talk about his coffee can portfolio. Really interesting way. Kevin is a pretty strong gold bull. He understands the markets very well, but he's found ways to make money, all kinds of different ways to make money besides just in gold and silver. I think it's a good, you know, a diversification if you can do it wisely in a crazy market like we're in, and I think Kevin is doing a remarkable job. So he'll be with us right after the break. Don't go away.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Timberline Resources is a mineral exploration and resource development company focused on gold discovery in the world-class mining jurisdiction of Nevada. The company's flagship Eureka project hosts a significant gold resource and drill-indicated upside potential at nearby higher-grade targets. Timberline Resources trades in Canada under the symbol TBR and on the OTCQB in the U.S. under the symbol TLRS. To learn more about this district-scale asset with exciting discovery potential, please visit www.timberlineresources.co. Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa. Play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have Kevin Duffy with us once again. And Kevin was with us several weeks ago, and really very interesting to have him because he has found a way to make money not only in gold and silver, but in a diverse portfolio. He certainly understands the need for honest money and monetary assets and commodities and other things in the portfolio, but he's found a way to diversify his portfolio, and his coffee can portfolio is very, very diverse. So I'm really pleased to have him with us again. Maybe you can give us some hints about how to shape our own portfolios. Thanks for joining me again, Kevin.
Jay, thanks for having me back on.
You know, before we go any further, I forgot to make a note here. The website, I guess they can Google you, but where can they go to sign up for your letter?
Sure. They can go to thecoffeecanportfolio.com or just okay. Google the Coffee Can Portfolio. It should show up.
Very good. All right. Well, you know, these are crazy times, no doubt about it. What sort of, you know, how do you see the markets now? I mean, we had the COVID and now the war. It seemed to, you know, it's causing a lot of trouble with supply chains. I'm worried a lot about food costs and so forth as a result of what's going on. But just give us a quick summary of your views of the global markets right now.
Sure. Well, I think we have to go back to pre-COVID. We had certainly a 10-year bull run. S&P 500 went up nearly five times. Then we get hit by COVID. We get a massive stimulus response. And so the initial sell-off, about a third correction in the S&P, brings the market to new highs. We get this just a crazy bubble or a series of bubbles, including the Cathie Woods funds and the meme stocks and, you name it. And it was basically lock everybody down, give them a bunch of stimulus money, and shut down the other competing casinos in terms of sports and funnel it all into the stock market casino. So that really peaked in about January, February of last year. And that was the the time when all the headlines were positive, the economists were all giddy, the economy was going to have the fastest growth out of the brief recession since the early 1950s. The vaccines were on the way, economy was reopening, everything was wonderful. And, you know, we have now, the narrative has shifted, and it's a lot darker. We now have a war in Ukraine. We have the stimulus drug wearing off. The vaccines didn't go according to plan. We have this Cold War with China. So we're in this, of course, as you mentioned, we have the supply chain issues, inflation, fastest rise in inflation. We're up at 7.9%, at least in terms of the measured inflation, fastest since in 40 years. So we've really come full circle. And I think, you know, bottom line, number one, the economy is, we're going into a recession. I don't think there's any way around that. The odds of that are extremely high, and it may be take the stagflationary form. And then on the other hand, we've seen a massive correction in the very stocks that were screaming a year ago have been absolutely pummeled. And so it's probably time to start looking for some bargains there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I don't know. I looked at the S&P this morning. I think it was down around 11% year over from January. But I think, as you mentioned, that metric is pretty deceiving, because it's just a few of the big guys that are holding up the average, and you have a lot of companies that have gotten whacked pretty hard. And so, I guess as a value investor, that's what the kind of thing you've got your eyes on, right?
Yeah, so I can put some numbers on this. And again, I think the inflection point was really January, probably late January of last year. That was the peak in the ARK funds and also the meme stocks. Now, we as those corrected, it's similar to the dot-com bubble bursting in 2000, where you had the rest of the market rally during the summer. So we had this divergence. But anyway, if we look at that inflection point of January of last year, since then, the S&P 500 is actually up 14%, even though it's corrected about 11 or 12% from the high. But S&P up 14%, NASDAQ 100 actually up 3%. The ARK Innovation Fund that I mentioned, Cathie Wood, down 61%.
Wow.
And then you look at something that's not quite as aggressive, the Barron Global Advantage Fund, down about 38%. Mm-hmm. If you look at, now what's done well, of course, has been commodities. Energy is up 83%, mm-hmm. and the CRB index is up 66%. And value stocks have outperformed growth by about 14%. So there is a lot going on there. There's a lot of carnage, and there have been some huge winners and some huge losers.
Right. And so I would like to, certainly want to get into the way you pick your stocks and the way your portfolio. And you have several major themes that you put in your newsletter that I think are really interesting. First off, the first, I think, where you're most heavily weighted, the inflation is not dead theme. And you say precious metals will benefit and global bond bubble will burst. You've got, if I understand this, 16.2% of your portfolio in that, focused in that with that concept, right?
Right. So, as far as the inflation theme, let's see, I can pull this up right now. Mm-hmm. We have, okay, so the 16.2%, Jay, is mm-hmm. is actually precious metals. So we own precious metals funds. Now, right. We also have, we own gold stocks. We actually own Sprott Inc., which is a an asset manager, which is heavily into the resource and precious metals area. Mm-hmm. We own royalty companies, so that's in another 20% or so. But yeah, that's a significant part of the portfolio. And that has not moved anywhere near as much as the other commodities. So, but we do also have some exposure to fertilizer and energy. But, you know, those are the areas that have really run right now. And so our tendency is to just kind of stand pat and maybe even trim a little bit in that area. Not much, because I think you've got two things going on, you know, supply and demand, and high prices. The cure for high prices is high prices. So we are getting demand destruction. And I think we're going into a recession. So that's going to be a negative. But on the supply side, you're just not able to bring new supply to that area. So I think the long-term investment thesis holds, but I think you have to be able to kind of look through this global recession, and I wouldn't be surprised to see the energy stocks correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would. Yeah. I mean, they've gone up, you know, oil just shot up, and it's down to around, you know, from, 120 or so to 90 in just a few trading sessions. So your inflation is not dead theme. You've got between the metal itself, you got CEF, that's the Central Fund of Canada, that's I think a Sprott fund now, but that's 16.2%, mm-hmm. as I say. That's gold and silver. I think it's a mix of the two, right?
It's a 60-40 mix, right.
60-40 in favor of gold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then AEM, Agnico Eagle, I guess, ASA, FNV, and yes, so I see, yeah. Okay, well, that makes sense. And so basically 37% of your portfolio in that sector. So that's by far and away. And then you said the next theme is the imminent death of fossil fuels. Well, not quite. And how are you playing that? You've got several things
right,
here.
Right, so we own, like I mentioned, fertilizer and also natural gas E&P companies. I've got an oil services company in there, and actually bought the falling knife in Russia. We bought a little bit of the Russia ETF, which hasn't worked out so well so far, but you know, here's crossing our fingers. So we have a small stake in that.
What is that ETF?
RSX.
RSX. Okay.
Yeah, the VanEck.
Well, we'll see how that happens, how that works out. A little over 9% in that sector.
Right.
And then you've got Amazon.com is not going to put all retailers out of business. In other words, there will be some competition for Amazon eventually. And so how are you playing that? I mean, you're buying various retailers, I guess you think have a shot at doing well in spite of Amazon.
Right. Now, this is an area that what I really like to latch on to is simple narratives and start to, and when they get repeated over and over again, and look below the surface. And so that really led, and also to take a very much a contrarian approach. So, you know, everybody knows that Amazon is going to put all the retailers out of business. They know the malls are dead and all the rest of it. And the, you know, the real story in my mind is that these companies have really adapted. They have, Amazon has picked a lot of the low hanging fruit. They bankrupted a number of companies like Borders. But there are a lot of retailers that have survived that, and they've adapted with the omni-channel model. So they're basically e-commerce companies. These are really technology companies or companies that have adopted technology, but they're sort of cast into this discard pile of these you know, really beaten down stocks. And it is remarkable, Jay. I mean, I don't need to go through the whole list of these companies, but what I'm doing is just building a basket. I've got, you know, 9 or 10 of these right now. And the other beauty of this is that the retailers can touch some of the other themes. So, for example, if you want to get long agriculture, you might own Tractor Supply. Mm-hmm. Or Another area that we get into a little bit further down the list is the emergence of emerging markets and the middle class consumer, especially in China. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's a lot of negative news in China and right now. And a stock that we like and have owned for a long time is Skechers USA. Mm-hmm. Now, Skechers is based in Southern California, but they do, and they have a, you know, kind of a stodgy business. They're in the casual footwear business. They're the third largest casual footwear company.
Uh-huh.
But they do half of their business overseas, and most of that is in Asia, and they have a pretty good exposure to China. So, you know, the stock trades at 10 times earnings, and I think it's a, you know, it's got a great balance sheet, but these are the kinds of opportunities that you see within retail. And like I said, they can check boxes of some of these other themes that we might want exposure to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, value investing is not dead. Gamco is a company you've got. So passive investing is not going to put all active managers out of business. But so what do you see the trend here?
Right. There has been, you know, one of the things that I like to look at from a contrary standpoint is fund flows. Mm-hmm. And the flows out of active funds and into passive funds over the last 10 years has been staggering. It's been a swing of, I think, over $3 trillion. It's just a staggering number. And, you know, I think one way to look at that as an investor, it's kind of like you have these two ponds, right? And you've got the one pond has, you know, everybody realizes there's a bunch of fish in that pond. And so everybody and the other pond is kind of fished out. So that mm-hmm. so the fishermen all gravitate to the other pond. Mm-hmm. And it gets overfished. And the meanwhile, the pond that gets abandoned, the fish are multiplying and there's nobody there. And I think that really describes what's going on with passive investing. So mm-hmm. we can look at this from a valuation standpoint. You might look at, let's say, BlackRock. BlackRock yeah. trades at about 6x revenue. Franklin Resources, which would be your classic value manager, trades at about 2x revenue.
Uh-huh.
And then T. Rowe Price, which would be an active manager, but it's more of your classic growth manager, it trades at about 4x revenue. So I think that gives you a sense. And, you know, the asset management business is really a terrific business. You know, you can also look at this. I mentioned Skechers. Skechers is a great illustration. If you compare Skechers to Nike, okay, both global footwear brands, Nike, of course, is bigger than significantly bigger than Skechers, but they both have these, big global footprints. And but if you look at the metrics in terms of the growth metrics and the balance sheet and all the rest of it, I mean, Skechers is a better company than Nike. It's got better prospects. And yet the difference, and I haven't looked at the PE of Nike, but it's got to be, it's over 20x versus 10x for Skechers. So I think that illustrates this this huge disparity between passive and active investing. And it really shows that for an active investor, this is really, it's like being a mosquito in a nudist colony right now. You know, it's really a target-rich environment.
Yeah. So you like Gamco, I think.
Yeah, this is Mario Gabelli's firm. Mm-hmm. I mean, he owns, I think, 78-80% of the stock. I tend to like stocks with founder that are founder run, that have mm-hmm. People who have a lot of skin in the game. They can take the long view. I'm definitely a long-term investor, so I want people running them that are really taking the long view, and that's a good way to get our interests aligned with the people running them.
Now, I noticed this just because there's so many other themes that we won't have time to talk about, but bloated governments is a theme number 12 in your letter. And I believe I saw that maybe the one stock that you had there, an ETF, TBF, which is a short on the 20-plus year treasuries, U.S. treasuries, right? I think you might have sold that now.
We did. And that was really a tough choice because, and this is the problem when you have all of these different ideas, you know, you can only put 100% into the portfolio. So if you make room for something, and like I said, I'm getting my ducks lined up in some of these growth areas, some of these, you know, more optimistic themes. I mean, we've talked about some of the more pessimistic themes. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to get, you know, I'm trying to get my ducks lined up for that. And I just had to make some room in the portfolio. So I thought, as much as it pained me to sell that, because I really do think that interest rates are going to be going up longer term, but mm-hmm. I'm trying to envision a scenario right now where we have a lot of, we still have a lot of complacency, I think. Mm-hmm. We have the individual retail investor who was really at the gambling table last year. I think they're hanging on. Margin debt is still quite high. And so I could see where there's a forced liquidation, and I just felt like I needed to raise some cash. And there could even be a safe haven bid in an environment like that, and you might actually see people, investors, scramble towards treasuries. But longer term, I'm definitely bearish on governments. I'm bearish on their debts, so. Yeah. You know, it's probably an idea we will revisit in the future.
Well, sure. But if we're going to have an equity market, I mean, I think we could see quite a lot of downside on the equity markets yet. Then there could be a lot of money, I would think, going over into the into the funds and into the treasuries. And that would make sense for me that you're selling this for the time being. You'd always get back into it. With just a couple of minutes left here, and another area where you've done extremely well. The theme is the middle class will be squeezed in the United States, and in China the middle class will expand. But in the States, in the more developed countries, you're seeing a squeeze. And Dollar Tree has done extremely well for you, from what I can see.
Yes, and you know, so there's really a couple of areas, but that is unfortunately a theme, and I think this is also a byproduct of ESG. The mm-hmm. underinvestment in commodities, we're seeing gasoline prices go up. And so it just seems like all these interventions that the government pulls off, they always hit the lower mm-hmm. rungs of the ladder and they climb up to the middle class. So we just see that as a long-term theme. And the dollar stores, Dollar General, Dollar Tree has run quite a bit, but I think Dollar General has actually gotten pulled down with a lot of the other growth stocks. So that might be something to look at that hasn't done quite as well.
All right. We'll have to leave a go at that, Kevin. I want to thank you so much. There's so many other themes we could talk about. Migration trends away from high tax, high crime cities. That was another theme. The economy will become more information-based and location independent. So there's just a lot of other things we don't have time for. So we are out of time. I want to thank you so much for sharing your time and thoughts with us, Kevin. And I want to tell our listeners it's coffeecanportfolio.com to sign up for Kevin's letter, very reasonably priced letter. And I think a lot of very valuable information to help you diversify and navigate some very troubled waters. Thank you so much, Kevin, for being with us.
Thanks, Jay. Have a good day.
I will do so. And that is it for this week, folks. Next week, Bob Moriarty will join me. He's a 321 Gold guy, and Patrick Highsmith of Firefox Gold. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.